Welcome to the Great Georgia Pollinator Podcast. I am your host, Becky Griffin, and I am very excited to have you join us today because we have a special guest with us. Today, we have Irony Payne, and she is the Pollinator Coordinator of the Georgia Association of Conservation Districts. So welcome, Irony.
Hey, Becky. Happy to be here.
Well, thanks for spending some time with us today. Why don't you take a minute or two and tell our audience a little about yourself?
Yeah, so I grew up in North Georgia. So my family has a farm, a cattle farm up there. I went to college and undergrad at Young Harris College. And then I got my master's in environmental science from Oregon State University. And I definitely went the non-traditional route with that because I took classes through the institution, but I was actually able to do research based here in Georgia. So I got to stay local, which was awesome because this is my home state and I love being here. So.
Well, did you get to visit Oregon at all?
No, because the majority of my program took place during the 2020 pandemic.
So. Oh, no.
So well, I haven't been yet.
You owe yourself a trip, I think, for sure.
Yeah, I agree.
Well, I'm interested to hear about some special gardens that you're working on and working in. So what can you tell us about those?
Yeah, so GACD actually, which GACD is Georgia Association of Conservation Districts, received a grant for what we call the Pollinator Initiative. And the grant was given to us by the Natural Resources Conservation Service. And through that grant, we were able to implement some garden spaces statewide. And it's a two-phase project, with the first phase being smaller demonstration gardens that are located at schools and public spaces like community gardens. And then the second phase of the project are these larger habitat sites. They're like a tenth of an acre. And we're putting those in at welcome centers across the state. Again, community gardens, schools that are interested. But we have two different phases. And yeah, these are awesome spaces that we hope to be used for educational purposes and increasing habitat for pollinator all across Georgia.
Which, you know, is near and dear to my heart.
Yes.
So talk a little bit more about the education. How will the education happen?
Yeah, so for the demonstration garden specifically, we really honed in on school systems and public garden spaces. And we have what we call points of contacts of all these sites. And we create educational materials and find educational materials that have already been created and provide these for these contacts. And so these gardens specifically are set up to where the gardens have native wildflowers, native grasses, and then also each year the locations get to plant vegetables that are pollinator dependent. And so in this way, these sites can teach students, local community members about the bridge between pollinators and the food we eat.
Great. Yeah. Some good systems thinking there.
Yeah.
You know, which is important to develop good adult critical thinkers. So I love that. How many schools do you think, or how many schools have you guys put a garden in so far?
We have, 51 gardens statewide. And I think, honestly, I think it's about 85% of them, anywhere in the 80 to 90 range, are schools. And then the rest would be community gardens.
Wow, that's impressive. That's you've been busy. That's a lot of work. So when you go in and you you plant the gardens and give the educational materials, who is in charge of maintaining those gardens?
So maintenance for the gardens is up to the school system. And so we definitely keep up regular contact with our point of contact because that does change. People switch positions in school systems. That happens. And so we just ensure constant contact with these people. We check in, ask how they're doing, because they're the ones on the ground making sure everything's up to par because, you know, stuff happens. We've had issues with weed eaters coming through, people maintaining the school grounds. And so we just have to ensure constant contact with those folks that are on the ground actually with these spaces because I can't always drive from North Georgia to South Georgia at the drop of a hat, unfortunately.
Right. And that empowers them to take ownership of the garden. If they're in charge of it and they have to take care of it, they're going to care more about it and use it more often, probably. At least that's kind of what I've seen in my experiences. Mm-hmm. So the welcome centers, have you guys gotten any welcome centers completed?
Not yet. So those we have been planning with GDOT the past several months, and we are hoping to start getting those prepped and planted this fall.
Oh, excellent. So are there any gardens that are in public spaces that the average Georgian can just pop by and view, or not quite yet?
Yeah, so there are several community gardens that already have them set up. The larger habitat sites are all in site prep mode. So if you show up, you're going to see just plastic laid out to smother the competitive vegetation. And so that might not be exciting to see yet, but next year it definitely will be as we start planting seeds and seeing stuff growing. But the smaller demo gardens, yes, absolutely. I have a list of sites. So if anyone is ever interested in where these are and anyone near them that they want to go look at, they can always contact me. And my contact info is on our pollinator page, which is www.gacd.us/pollinators.
All right. I will put that in the show notes as well, so people can easily get a hold of you. That's really exciting. So have you had any surprises? I mean, that's a big undertaking. That many gardens all across the state. You've got to have some great stories.
Yes. So we used root pouches instead of the traditional wooden raised beds for the demo gardens, because they're super easy to set up. You just unfold them and fill them and you're done. And with kids, that's super fun and easy. But we have had issues with just, again, weed eaters slicing bags.
Oh, no.
Things like that. We also have had some sites, you know, mix their own seed mix with the provided seed mix. And so they'll send us these species asking, what is this that's growing? And we'll look and think, that's not in the seed mix we gave you.
Oh, yeah.
And so we've been seeing a lot of variety with that. But across the board, though, people have been sticking with our native mixes. So that is good.
Good. Oh, yeah. Oh, the weed eater. That's something that all schools, regardless of how big their garden is, have to deal with. We see that a lot in tree damage as well. Those weed eaters can eat some weeds and some trees and vegetables too, for sure.
Yes.
Have you had an opportunity yet? I know the project is new, but have you had the opportunity to see any success stories, hear any great things from teachers or kids, or is it still new yet for that?
No, so I've been getting photo updates and I've been getting text messages with pictures of the blooms on the flowers and the pollinators the students are finding. And it's really exciting to see, especially because the pollinator dependent crops that they've planted, a lot of these students didn't know that they had blooms and were just blown away to see that the food that they eat has a bloom and a bee visits it and helps them eat it.
So what are the pollinator dependent crops that you guys are using?
So it varies across, because we let them decide what they want to plant, because that way they can harvest it and the students can enjoy it. But we did give them UGA Extension's list of the pollinator dependent crops. So we've got some locations that have mustards. We have some that have okra. We have some that put their gardens next to blueberry bushes. We have some that put theirs next to squash, which, you know, for the squash and watermelon and things, we did advise them not to plant those in the pouches because they tend to take over everything else.
Oh, yes.
But it's been, the kids have loved seeing that because they had no idea. So
I bet. And I just love that. That's my favorite part of the pollinator census, is seeing young people get excited that things they've not seen before, audibly gasping and then being enthralled by nature. So it is so exciting that you've gotten so much done in such a short amount of time. So what are the plans for the future?
So future planning is, you know, getting these sites squared away at Welcome Centers with GDOT, continuing site maintenance. You know, next year we'll be planting for the habitat sites that are larger and have been going through site prep this year. Currently working on more lesson plans focused on pollinators and agriculture, hoping to release some of those on our webpage at the end of this month, so right before the school year. And then we're currently partnering with Monarchs Across Georgia to get some workshops going this fall that focus on pollinators and agriculture, and essentially teach educators how to teach their students about these topics. So
excellent. And the more of that we can do, the better, especially with these new ag teachers. that are been installed in schools a couple years now. I know I've talked to many of them and they felt a little lost. So pollinators and agriculture, very important, especially for a state that prides itself on things like blueberries and watermelon.
Yes.
You know, we are very, very dependent on those pollinators. And I think a lot of people don't know that. So spreading the word is very important. And I'm excited to see you guys continue on that path. So if you are an average homeowner and you're thinking, okay, I'm excited about this. I want to have pollinators next to my blueberries or my squash plants. And I want to teach my kids to be awed by nature. What would you recommend?
The biggest thing that I emphasize, and that's because, which I don't know if my dad will ever listen to this, but he is obsessive about mowing the grass.
Oh,
and
boy.
I really encourage people to A, plant your native grasses, and B, let them grow. It does not have to be this perfectly manicured lawn. Let it grow. Plant native wildflowers near the crops that you're growing, like your blueberry bushes. Put native wildflowers anywhere that you can, but again, emphasis on natives, because I know people really like their fancy bulbs that they get from Home Depot, and it's like they are beautiful, but the more habitat you can increase for your pollinators, the better your crops will do. And if you want kids to be engaged, it's important for you to also be engaged. You know,
right.
If you just tell your kid to go out and monitor the blueberry bush for bees for an hour, it's not going to be as fun if you're not out there with them learning to or engaging with them, because when you work together, you can find things the other person misses. And
right.
So it really helps when you're engaged together. And again, anything you can do to improve your space, and it usually means letting it be a little wild, quote unquote, wild looking, but that's what they prefer, because they need those spaces for shelter, and you know, they need different plants for different parts of their life cycle. So it's not always just planting some pretty flowers and calling it a day.
Right. And family pollinator fun is always a good thing. Mm-hmm. I always like to, you know, when I get a gardener who's really involved and loves these pollinators and these pollinator plants, especially in agriculture, to teach them a little bit too. It's kind of a pathway to some of those beneficial insects that do other eco services for us. So have you run across any people discovering maybe some predator wasps or any cool insects?
Well, the concept of wasps, I feel like, has been changing in people's minds, because when they think of wasps, they think these horrible, violent insects, but a lot of them we require for pollination, and it's been cool for people to actually witness them pollinating, because when people think wasps, they initially just think of something that's going to attack you.
Exactly. And I know exactly what you mean. I like to tell people that I used to be able to tell people that I grow plants specifically for wasps. And I used to say, well, I've never been stung by a wasp. I'm not out there grabbing them. But I had a wasp die in my home and stepped on it. And so I got stung that way. But that's the only time. So yes, don't be afraid of them. And I know there's a new book out about wasps. And I think we've all been trying to spread the word that wasps are our friend and great predators to get rid of some of things like pickle worm and cabbage worms and things like that. So it's all very exciting. So of course I have to ask you, where will you be counting for this year's Great Georgia Pollinator Census?
So I'm glad you asked, because one of our potential, we're working on it now, but one of our hopeful workshops this fall in partnership with Monarchs Across Georgia will be on August 21st at Linwood Nature Preserve in Gainesville, Georgia. And so we are making sure every single participant at this workshop participates in the census. And then I have been putting my feelers out in local schools for the 20th.
Great.
So I can actually go out here locally, which I've been getting, yes, we want you to, and also, but we'll have to wait and see what the requirements are at the beginning of the year.
Yeah, so. I think my teacher friends and even principal friends are you can't make any commitments right now, but I know I've been working with many, many schools who are excited to get back to it. And it could be that they just do it with their students with no parent volunteers. We just don't know yet. But the excitement is mounting for the census, and in part by great projects like the one that you're involved in. The more we create wonderful spaces, the more we can count pollinators and do great things for our farmers in helping create these corridors of habitat. So I want to close today by asking you something I ask all of my guests, and I'm anxious to hear your response. What is your favorite pollinator and why?
So the hummingbird clearwing moth is one of my absolute favorites because I grew up being obsessed with insects. My mother actually found a collection of them in my closet when I was about 8 years old, and we had to have a really long talk about what we can bring in the house to keep and what needs to stay in the yard. But I've always had a fascination with them and moths, especially because my family on our farm, we have a ton of oak trees, which are host trees for a lot of our moths here in Georgia. So I grew up seeing so many different species, but I remember the first time I saw that it was on one of our native rhododendrons, and I just couldn't believe it just because I thought it was a hummingbird. And when I saw it up close, it was just the coolest insect I'd ever seen. Aww. And so I love watching them pollinate. I could do it for hours.
And so now that you have put it out there that those are your favorite insects, I wonder if you're going to start, if the word gets out, they're going to start visiting you more often.
I would love that.
Interesting to find out. Yes, definitely. Definitely. So, well, thank you for joining us today, Irony. We sure enjoy hearing your work, and I hope you'll keep in touch with us and let us know how things keep going. You have been listening to Becky Griffin, host, and Irony Payne, the pollinator coordinator of the Georgia Association of Conservation Districts, talking about all the cool gardens she's been putting in across the state. We invite you to get ready for the Great Georgia Pollinator Census, which will happen this August, the 20th and the 21st. Check us out on social media, our Georgia Pollinator Census page, as well as our webpage. It's in the notes. And Irony, I will be anxious to see your counts after you count for the census. Well, thank you so much for being here, and all of our listeners, have a great day.